Access number 29047, Mr. Len Townend, Reel 7. Now, what else do you remember? I mean, what are the... You said there were some funny things happened there. I mean, other than the meal, the bit of a con you got onto there, anything else about your time there that brings it to life for us?
Well, again, the organisation was such that everything was done properly. For instance, that was all through the winter, and Germany gets cold in winter. So, if you were working on the engines in the middle of the night, it was bloody cold. So they designed locally, they got things made up that on trolleys you push this into the aircraft that completely surrounded, you zipped a cover around it, surrounded it, and hot air was blown in. So you were working in fact you used to have to take your shirt off sometimes, it got so hot. In the coldest of conditions, the aircraft was surrounded, the engines, anything was surrounded in an environment that you could work in. But never known to anywhere else in the world. Trolley acts, I don't know, you know, batteries, the aircraft starter batteries. You start the aircraft up, you plug this battery in, and that's it. These are all hand pushed, you push these in there. Nowadays, of course, you don't get great big jenny sets, but that's beside the point. All of this was motorised. They put them on the backs of little 1500 weights, so there was no. And you used to have German drivers, so as soon as you need to start an engine up, one of these came up, you plugged in, there was no mucking about, hard work doing it. Everything like this, food, the Naffy was open all the 24 hours a day, so even if you weren't getting a meal properly, you could go in there for drinks and coffee and the rest of it. There used to be breaks, because it was supposed to be, we'd say 30 aircraft take off from Lübeck, and that would be their wave. Then they'd be off, and they'd be back in about probably an hour and a half. There's probably another one went between, but you had the break in between, and then you worked like hell to get them back. It was just a case of going when you got time to go. You went. And
what did they do at the canteen? Mug of tea or?
Oh, everything. There was all every food under the sun. It was the best bed I've ever been fed in the Air Force. Of course, you had to pay for it in the Naffy side of it, but the other was, of course, normal food. That was it. Everything.
Anything else? Any other stories? Let us know what
they did. I think. Good. No.
Did you think there was a real... I mean, did you worry that the war was going to break out, that it's going to be a war with the Russians? Or
strange enough, I can never, ever remember worrying about a war starting. I mean, I don't know, it's diverting. When we went to the Suez, which comes later, I took a gang of lads there that were all regulars, and we said, well, that's what we get paid for.
It was quite close to a war in 1948, I suppose.
Oh, yes, it was, but, you know, so... That was a hard look.
Did you see the Soviets as the enemy, or did you see them? Yes,
always. I mean, one particular incident that I can talk about, but I cannot verify because it may not have been right. But one of our DACs was coming in one night. This DAC was supposed to be bringing in children, bringing them out, and it crashed on the runway. Well, the runway was only 50 yards from the Russian zone, and it crashed in the Russian zone, and they wouldn't let us go in to get them out. Now, as far as I know, the Russians got them out. I know no more, but I mean, that would. We'd have gone to the letters. Yeah, we'd have started the war there.
Now, anything else then, before we leave there? Because you're at Lübeck till July 48.
Yeah, it's quite a long while there. Yeah.
Nothing else about Lübeck?
No, it was the same, exactly the same.
How did you get with the German civilians? I should have asked that.
Very well, especially the girls. Yeah.
Was there any hang up over the war? I mean, it was only, what, 10 years?
Oh,
3 years before.
Let's put it, there were two types. There was the civilians that were civilians, and there were ones that used to be the Nazi youth. And they were arrogant buggers. And again, we used to work a lot with those because they were engineers. They were good engineers. The German Air Force, when they trained their people, they trained them properly. And they were good engineers. So they were enlisted. They came along and helped with doing work. But there were definitely the two. There were the the ones that used to have the flipping tattoos on their arm and were still proud of it. And the ordinaries. So we got them very well.
Was there trouble with them, or was it just mutual dislike?
Mutual dislike. You never get any trouble with them. They realised there's no point in giving trouble. They got a job. They got a job with us, which they needed, because it was but on many occasions, not while I was on the airlift, because I never had time there. Oh yeah, that was the one thing I'd forgotten about. While you're on the airlift, later on when things got going well, again the organisation came and they opened leave camps along the Baltic coast, and I used to be able to go up there totally free, and these were great. And they were just,
tell me about them.
Well, they were just leave camps. They were just very good billeting arrangements, that sometimes in hotels, sometimes in old army buildings, and everything was there for you. There was dancing arranged and the bars and everything. Total relaxation from working all this time. And that was all free. You used to get so many days up in the leave camps.
Now, what's next then? You seem to be posted to aircraft construction wing. I'm not sure about
it. Well, that is again, at the end of the airlift, we suddenly found ourselves with nothing to do except with the Air Force. So this theme runs all the way through your Air Force career. When they find you've got no work to do, they find something. they used to have to go out marching and things like this, which was totally alien to us. But they would not, Air Force, the command in Germany didn't want to release us, obviously, because we were there. And as far as I can say, and again, I don't know government policy, this was the knowledge of the day, is that they weren't sure that when they opened the corridors and let the ground transport, the Russians recognised that we'd beat them and there was no point in keeping them. So they got normal ideas going through to Berlin again, and there was no need for the airlift. The airlift finished. Well, at this point, we could have all gone back to England and got back to our units. But they were very reluctant to let us go back in case the Russians decided to close them again overnight. So we were all dispersed all over the place, and I went to an airfield construction wing.
That's number 5357.
That's 5257 airfield construction wing, yes.
And that's at Sundern.
That's at Sundern in the centre of Germany.
And you were building RAF
Wildenrath, yes. That's,
Now, why do they need an engine fitter at an aircraft? You know, I mean, are you working as a lay? What are you doing?
Running an MT section and the plant construction section, all the bulldozers and that. That was my job to look after that, but only as an NCO. I mean, the whole thing was run by the German Labour Corps. The whole of the labour force were ex-German army engineers.
So your MT section and plant section, they were all German?
They're totally staffed by German, except for how many of us? There was a CO, squadron leader CO, and about six British NCOs to control them.
Now, you were fine with dealing with the lorries and the thing. How about the bulldozers and things?
Well, again, it's a piece of crap that's held together with nuts and bolts. And I did my best to learn about it. I also learned how to drive a bulldozer. And I mean, the German civilian labour there, they were quite used to being bossed around by when they're in the army, and we were the NCO in charge. That was it.
Now, you had nothing to do with the actual building of runways, though. I mean,
other than the fact that I used to get involved, I used to go with them and that sort of thing. As I say, there's no way I could have driven it. I used to drive a bulldozer to knock the trees down, because typical of all people, when they start something like this, they build an airfield. What they build it in the middle of a forest. So the first thing you have to do is knock the trees down. And these were all knocked down by bulldozers.
And you did some of that.
Oh, I loved that. It was great. You put.
What did
it like, driving? Power. You know nobody's going to get in the front of you. You put the bulldozer blade down, go underneath the roots of the tree, lift it out. No, wrong. You put the bulldozer blade up, you hit the top of the tree, which pushes it forward and lifts the roots out. You then back off, put the blade under the roots and pump it out. That's it. Then another truck takes it away. I used to love that. But that wasn't my job. I was looking after it.
That was just fun.
That was fun. Yeah.
Now, where were you living? Was Wildenrath already there?
Wildenrath was a forest. There was nothing else there. It was only Wildenrath because the local German village was Wildenrath. couple of dozen houses.
You were expanding.
No.
It looks as if you're adding runways, but you're just building it.
Just building it. Start right from scratch. We started out, heaven itself, they billeted us in a German guest house, German hotel. And this was absolutely marvellous. Christ. half a dozen drunken airmen. And it was marvellous. The beer there, everything was all there. Bags of good grub, the lot. If you take into account that they eat their bacon raw. But some nosy flipping health officer came round. God, this is no good. So they made us go with the nearest army camp. They stuck with the nearest army camp, which was the worst army camp in the world. Its sole job, it was a full fuel depot. Its sole job was to issue fuel to the surrounding areas where the army used to come in and fill up their fuel bowsers from there and go out again. And this only used to take place about 2-3 hours in the morning. For the rest of the day, there was nothing to do. Well, the RSM there was a absolute total bastard of an RSM. It was the worst you could ever have. And he used to keep this place. There was nothing else to do. He used to keep it absolutely balled up. Everything was shiny and that. What used to happen? Flipping Air Force blokes, of which he'd gotten, well, there must have been about a dozen of us at the most. Probably, no, not even a dozen. No, there's about 6 or 7 of us. Used to come hurtling back at night, dripping mud all over his garret floors. Our vehicles, these were all shiny new. Ours were covered from head to toe in flipping mud. You don't build airfields without getting mud. And he hated us. He absolutely hated us. And he made all the troops that were there hate us as well. Alone, some of them did. Because you had to make your bed up in the morning before you went, even if you'd gone out to work in a flipping airfield there. And there's no way I could have made a bed like that. I still couldn't do it. The blankets had to be folded, sharp creases and all this. The Air Force blokes can't do that sort of thing. So as soon as we'd gone, he used to come round, hell, our beds, and make his blokes make our beds for us, when they could imagine how popular we were then. Oh, and things like that. He used to come around a billet at night and order you to go to bingo, because he ran the bingo, and things like that. Absolute, total British Army Sergeant Major in control under absolute conditions. And we hated it there, obviously.
So you were there the rest of the time?
The rest of the time, yeah, well, that's it. They wouldn't let us go out, so we had to stick it out there.
Any particular problems with the MT section? I presume it was easy for you and these German...
Oh, no, I mean, in fact, quite honestly, I learnt an awful lot about MT from them. I mean, they were experts. They were ex-German army people, the GCLO, German Army Labour, Germany, GC, German, oh, forgot one, CLO, Labour Office, I know, German Corps Labour Office, something
German
like that.
German Labour Corps Workers.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And their mechanics, you've been going on about them before. They were just better than ours, were they?
They were better. I won't say. Well, okay, I wouldn't say that. So they were better trained than us. They were trained to a bigger depth. They could use tools a lot better than we could. See, we were aircraft fitters. We were trained to service aeroplanes. We weren't trained to build them. But they could. They were brilliant, brilliant engineers, all of them.
Now, anything else about your time there? I mean, it can't have been. I don't know how long you were there for, July, August. Then you seemed to go to Esch.
Yeah, well, Esch, that was...
Is that the army camp?
No. Why the devil did we go to Esch as apart from anywhere else? No, that was...
And then...
That's right. Esch was a little radio camp that was there, and it was disbanded. So they took us away from the army and put us in Esch. Still the same job, but we went to Esch, which was a little RAF unit on its own, and that was all right. That was quite good.
And then there's Butzwellerhof.
Now, Butzwellerhof, that's when the Air Force suddenly discovered it's got all these highly trained flipping aircraft fitters working on bulldozers, and it suddenly gathered us all in. I got sent to Gutterslow on vampire fighters.
That's in October 1950.
Yeah.
So you were there for quite a long time.
Yeah, on Air Force Construction Wing was, yes.
What happens then? In October 1950, is that right? You go to Guslov.
Yeah.
And that's the number one squadron.
Number one squadron.
That's one of the first times you've been with a squadron for a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was on second line service in this bunch, but squadron, I very rarely went on squadrons. But that was number one squadron, that was vampires. Deadly airplanes.
Now, why were they. What was the squadron like? I mean, did they have a special reputation being first?
One squadron's still got a reputation now. I think this new JAG squadron's going to be one squadron, isn't it?
So it had a good reputation?
Yeah.
And what was your reception like when you joined them? I mean, you'd been out messing about on aircraft for quite a while.
Yeah.
Doing this business of aircraft construction. It looks like you were there, nearly a year? Or more.
Well, the reception was, it's a job, get on with it. If you did it, you're all right. If you didn't, you were judged on what you could do. And I mean, I didn't know anything about vampires. I'd not worked on vampires. I'd never worked on jets before. But that was it. I was on the job training with other people, and that was it. It wasn't very long before you.
Now, what was the characteristic of it? What were the vampires like? They are a jet, and
they're a single engine goblin. The engine's a goblin. It's single engine. It's got twin booms, and the engine exhaust fires out underneath the booms. Single, just a little glob at the front.
Now, did you know anything about jets at all?
Not at all. Not at all.
Not how they worked, or.
Oh, I know how they work, because I mean, you always, if you're any good as a fitter, you always try and keep abreast of what's going on. And I knew basically how they worked, but I didn't know much about them at all.
So it was on. What did you think of the vampire and the goblin? Firstly, what was a vampire like as an aircraft? You said
it was a deadly aeroplane.
In what way? To which side?
From both sides. From service inside, it was. Dreadful. It was, everything used to go wrong with it. It wouldn't start. It had an ordinary engine like that. You pressed a button or something similar, like you press your car and it, to start it. But with a jet, you set all the levers, you pull it, and it goes through an automatic start. There's all sorts of automatic things coming that it lights up the way it goes. But it often didn't. It's electronics, and well, it wasn't even electronics in them days, it was electrics, and you used to get all sorts of things. Then you get a wet start, you used to flood itself, and it wouldn't start. And then it started and caught fire in the ground at the back. You had to nip out quick and get pushing it out the bloody way. Pilots were crashing them all over the place. They shot rockets at you. It's great.
Why were they crashing? Were they difficult to fly?
Very difficult to fly. Vampire was it. The main thing. That while we was at Guderslow, that happened. When I say main, it didn't happen every day, but it happened on several occasions. You know the theory of firing. You come down with a rocket and hang, and you fire it, and when it hits the ground, it comes up again. If it doesn't hit at the right angle and explode, it just bounces off. Well, if you didn't get the angle right, the speed of the vampire and the speed of the missile was just about equal, and they used to shoot themselves down. And that happened on several occasions. And the other one was that in those days, again, electronics, well, I suppose it still happens now, but the electronics were not as clever as they are now. And when you marshal an aircraft in, again, the term marshalling, you go like this, you rapidly learnt to never stand in front of the aeroplane, because quite often they came back with a hook-up. The bloody thing fired as it came in towards you. This hooked-up missile that they tried to fire on the range hadn't gone off. It shot past your ear hole. I mean, obviously, this was all evolving, and while I was at Guderslow, it evolved that if you got a hook up, the pilot wasn't allowed to come in. He had to go to a special bay over the other side of the airfield and get help. But to start with, it was had one or two very hairy incidents. I also started a vampire up in the hangar.
No, tell me that story.
Well, it's highly technical, this is.
No, don't worry about that. They'll understand it or not.
Where a vampire, the goblin, is started up by two glow plugs, as they call them. And these plugs are sitting two. Jet engines consisted of a number of cans, chambers. And you only need to start one or two of these, but in fact, the goblin had two. you had to start one of these up. So you inject the fuel in to start it up at Pineville. These two plugs, they're spark plugs, fire, and it lights the fuel, and that's it, goes out the back. Well, when you're putting an aeroplane to bed or putting it away for storage for a long while, to stop it going rusty inside, you do what you call inhibit it. You put a special inhibiting oil in, which sprays all the inside of it with an oil that stops it rusting. And what you do, you disconnect the oil and fuel tank, put an inhibiting can on it with the right amount of fuel in, and then do a dummy run. Just start it up so it goes. But to prevent anything funny going wrong, you disconnect the two plugs so you don't get any sparks, so you don't set fire to something you shouldn't do. Well, it was so common this that happened. I leaned over the car. I got a lad that was, oh, yeah, I know what to do, Chief. I know, wasn't the Chief saying, I know what to do, Court. You disconnect the plugs. So I reckoned to disconnect. I got up into the cockpit, pressed the button for it to start. And as I say, it's totally automatic. Got down from the cockpit and stood there waiting. One poor little lad at the back with a drip tray there to catch all the juice coming out the back, and the bloody thing lit up in the middle of a hangar full of aeroplanes. God! He'd only disconnected one plug. And as you know what life's like, it took your time to start a vampire with both plugs connected. This one had started in a flip inhibiting oil. But of course it wasn't inhibiting oil, it was just ordinary fuel was still in the pipelines. And this poor sod stood there with his guy with flames coming around him. I got charged for that.
Then you got blamed?
Oh, well, I was in charge.
It was your responsibility for not checking, I suppose.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, what happened? I mean, did it do much damage?
No, it didn't do any damage because, fortunately, the inhibiting oil took over and it went out. But it was the noise. I mean, a vampire starts up, it makes a noise. And all along the back of this hangar were all the offices, you know, with the CO and everybody in it. Like, everybody was on the balcony. There's no saying I didn't do it. But you see, to start with, I shouldn't have been out of the cockpit. I should have stayed in the cockpit throughout, and so I was just going out to watch and make sure everything was going right. And secondly, I should have checked the plugs myself. No, I mean, it's not really true. I shouldn't have, but nevertheless, there's no reason. You've got to have somebody you can trust, but this lad just made a mistake, and that was it.
And how serious were the charges? What happened?
Oh, carelessness or something. I forget what it is. I got a reprimand, that was all.
But you didn't get busted or anything?
No.
Now, any other stories? That's a good story. Any other stories about your time there, the servicing, second line servicing?
Not really. It was a very interesting time because this was a time when NATO was building up, and we used to get lots and lots of exercises there where, I don't think you can say anything else, that you're trying to flog the aeroplanes to foreign countries, you know, European countries, and you used to get all these VIPs come along and have these dues, and they used to build a mock village across the other side of the airfield, and all the vampires used to go in and hammer it to pieces with rockets and this sort of thing. So it's some quite interesting times. And of course there's the feud with the RAF regiment.
Yeah, tell me about the
future. Well, RAF regiment, you probably know they call them rock apes. For some peculiar reason, it's just service rivalry. You don't like rock apes. Rock apes don't like us. We're grease monkeys, they're rock apes. That's it. This is it. Well, there was an anti-aircraft unit of RAF regiment there, see. And they used to bring their guns out and practice on the tarmac in front of the same place where we used to test the aircraft out. So it got to be a bit of stupid. It was stupid. I mean, it's childish now when you think about it. They used to bring their guns out, get them all set out, and at that moment we'd race out and start a vampire up, so they had to retreat in a hurry. Because a vampire turned towards you with its back end going, is a hot rod point at you. Totally stupid. It's always to get into trouble for it, but it's the sort of thing that happens in the service. I used to hate us.
Anything else happening there? You're living in the accommodation. I presume it, you know, it's...
Well, it was German barracks again. Quite good accommodation. Good accommodation.
What else? What do you remember of your time there? Any other stories?
There wasn't a lot going at Goodislough because there wasn't much going. There wasn't much nightlife in Goodislough, so it was all nappy. I had a lot of any entertainment you had to go
was
in
there. What was a night out in a German nappy like? I mean, you know,
well, it's not a German nappy. It's a
a nappy in Germany.
And again, if you were in the airman's mess, in the airman's side, it was pretty well tea and wads you got, but have a pint and that sort of thing. If you were in the corporal's mess, it got a little bit more hectic because you could drink a bit stronger and that then. If you're in the sergeant's or the officer's mess, you could have a ball. But it was nothing great. Nothing, I mean, as far as I can remember, it used to close about 9:30 anyway. There's nothing great, but they were in when you're in some of the bigger cities, Lübeck and these sort of places, there was quite good nightlife in the German cities.
Back in the canteen, there'd be no shows or insta or anything.
Oh, occasionally there used to be, but not a lot in Germany.
What about the corporal's mess? Was that a lot of drinking? Was it a hard drinking mess?
Fairly, yes, fairly. It was, but it was under control. It's one of these strange things when you even though you only got to be a corporal, you had a little bit more responsibility and you didn't use go. But you in the airman's mess, you often used to get them falling about and had to have the officer and the police and take them away and stick them in a jug overnight. But in the corporal's mess, you didn't have too much problems.
Now, what about nightlife in Germany? I mean, what would you do when you went into the town? I mean, which town do you go to from Gütersloh? Is there a town, Gütersloh?
No, there's Gütersloh. There's very little, that's what I'm saying. In Gütersloh, there was a town, but there wasn't much going.
So where did you go?
You didn't used to go out much at Gütersloh. If you went out, you had to have a couple of days leave and go to Hamburg or somewhere like that. And Hamburg was quite a good city.
In what way?
It was plenty of nightlife, going to cabarets and all this sort of thing. It was actually not much different to what they do now, except they didn't used to do it so wild. They didn't used to fall about over the streets. Occasionally you did, but there's always enough people to pick you up nowadays, as far as I can see. They're all that flat. Yeah.
Now, so what's the next posting you get there? You're at Gütersloh till March 51, so you're not there 5 months.
Yeah.
Not that long.
No, I didn't stay very long. They didn't like me, just the way it was out.
And your next one, you seem to be going to a flying training school.
Yeah, well, when I came back, I went to fly at South Cerny. Is that South?
Where's that?
Near Gloucester.
Now, do you know which flying training unit?
I can't remember the number of it, but it was just a flying training school.
Now, what were you doing there, and why back in England? I mean, did you ask for it, or was it just...
Well, that again is, everybody liked Germany, and everybody used to apply for to stay for a longer stay. So when my time in Germany was over, I was due to go back. I applied for it, and the wing commander sent for me. He said, well, what do you stay here for? Oh, it's all right, I like it here. So he said, go home, lad, go home, let somebody else have a chance. Remember that quite clearly. So I had to come back.
And what was the what was your job like at South Cerny?
Again, I was just a fitter looking after airplanes. I can't even remember what airplanes they were. How was it say?
It seems to have been Prentice.
That's right, Prentice.
I don't know what Prentice is. It's a trainer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that a jet trainer? Or
no, no, it's with Gypsy Moth engines.
Now, what was that like? I mean, that sounds like it'd be a less of a job.
Yeah, well, it's the same job, but not so much of a... Well, not a blue-eyed boy's job, sort of thing. It was just less, just smaller aeroplanes. It was just another aeroplane. That was
anything
it.
Happened there? You're only there a couple of months.
Yeah, well, I got out of there. I didn't like it very much.
Why did you?
I don't really know why I didn't like it. It was another one of these places. It was a flying training school, so the discipline was a lot higher. When you go in an operational unit, the discipline isn't as strong. The discipline. Bullshine wise isn't as strong. The discipline engineering wise is much stronger. It's got to be. But there it was a flying training school at all the hours. You know, they push the aeroplanes to bed at night at 5 o'clock, except for the odd time at night flying. And it's more, let's say you had more parades and more this and more that, you know, to parade in the morning and this sort of thing. And you had to have a lot of parades and that, so you could, the cadets that were training to be pilots knew what, found out the Air Force worked like and all this sort of thing. And of course, we were the dog's bodies that formed the masses that went around.